Terrific. So, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Feeling much better. Give
Good, good.
my cold to my wife, which is always great.
That's nice. So,
Figured it was the least I could do.
it's so sweet of you. Much time did you miss? Did you have to leave, or were you gutting it out at the office?
No, the week before was when I was sick, and
Okay.
I missed 3+ days. I came in for the office meeting with the regional guy, but I missed the rest of the week, and my wife missed 2 days this past week, so she's the one who's not happy with me. I came in on that Wednesday, to try and share it with the rest of the office,
Right.
but that did not go, didn't go badly, but I don't think I gave it to anybody.
No,
I mean, I
no.
literally just came in for the meetings and then went home, and I try not to share that with anybody, but it's a little hard not to share it with the woman you're living with.
know, I know. So, what is on your mind regarding Supernova?
Well, I was kind of curious because I looked in the book and I couldn't find it there. But I think I know what it is. But I always want to ask you when I'm making assumptions because I make assumptions and then I find out that isn't exactly what you meant. But when you're talking about the centers of influence, a qualified member of the mastermind group, what exactly is that? Because I tried to look under acquisitions and centers of influence within the book areas, and I couldn't find anything that said what the mastermind group was outside of the program you have on the, on what was it, chapter? Am I just forgetting it? Because it was part. I was familiar with the word, but I
Yep.
couldn't find it anywhere. So I'm assuming it must be on the online course somewhere.
Well, it's in your workbook, chapter nine, okay?
Okay.
So
Got
I
it.
go mastermind group and then niche mastermind group. And then it's also, keep in mind, I took each chapter that I coach here and I wrote a whole chapter on it and put it in that book, The Supernova Multiplier. So when you're looking for answers, it's always going to be in the Supernova Multiplier.
Not the Supernova Advisor.
The Supernova Advisor will reference it, but it won't have the detail because it's kind of like, okay, this is what a mastermind group is and this is how it runs in the Supernova Advisor. So I'll tell you about it. Pretty good, but not as comprehensive. 10 years of 12 years of coaching mastermind groups is in the Supernova Multiplier.
Okay.
So it's everybody that I've coached that actually uses mastermind groups, how they use them, interviews with them, and then details as to how to run one exactly. So here's what I recommend. We're now in acquisition strategy. I recommend that you get the Supernova Multiplier on audio and listen
Okay.
to it on the way to and from work.
All right.
And
Can I get that
you
like an
can do it.
Amazon,
Yeah, you,
on audio?
exactly. Yes, exactly. Audiobooks owned by Amazon. And then you
I'll have
just play
plenty
it
of
on
time
your.
to do that. I'm in the car about 45 minutes both ways.
Oh, that's awesome. So that way you will be an expert. And here's the actual, when I took Dynamics of Goal Setting from Success Motivation Institute in Waco, Texas, when I first decided whether to go into management or not, I needed to have a goal setting course to help me with goal setting.
I thought
And
you
they
went to
said,
Wake
listen to
Forest.
each. Yeah, I did. But
That's not in
Success
Texas.
Motivation, Yeah, Success Motivation Institute is a great place. They create a lot of content, like dynamics of creative selling, dynamics of it was one on leadership, dynamics of leadership. It's a think tank, kind of like Supernova.
And where is it?
It's in Waco, Texas.
Waco. Okay. Is it like associated with Baylor? Is it associated with Baylor?
No, I think it's just a private organization. And what they did was they were masters of the art of selling, you know. So I used to listen to their tapes every day, and their process was listen to each chapter once a day for 5 days and then go to the next chapter. And so I did that, just as they said. And so it burns it into your brain. Now, you don't intensely listen every time because your mind wanders, but every time I would get something out of it because I would be in a slightly different place. They say you never step into the same river twice because the river's always moving, right? It's always a new river.
So you're saying where certain instances, because you had to break, you missed something said one day, you're going to get it the next day when you're
right
through the intersection. Okay.
Right, exactly. So if you can, listen to each chapter once a day for 5 days. So or you can listen to the whole book 5 times, either way. But the idea is don't think you can listen to it once and get it, okay? You're just not going to remember it. And keep in mind, this is skill training, which is different than just reading a history book or reading any other book. You read to comprehend, but you don't read to know or to use the skills. You read for entertainment. This is different. You're reading it to burn it from your short-term memory to your long-term memory and keep it there. So you can use the skills forever once you go through this kind of a process.
Okay.
And then you won't ever need to ask me another question about how a mastermind works. You'll be asking me questions about people and process and psychology of mastermind groups and how do you do this. So it'll be much more interesting conversation rather than the how-to.
Okay.
So it's better.
I've always had difficulty getting centers of influence to think I'm after anything that benefits them, which is really weird.
Well,
considering most of the centers of influence that I deal with, I have referred them much more business than they have referred me. Does that
make
sense?
If we go through the 5-step process for getting centers of influence and do it exactly as we've constructed,
it was in the workbook, and I read, but we didn't discuss it at all. Outside of that one call. And it was, you know, we had other issues that we wanted to discuss with you, and we guided the conversation another way.
Sure. But it isn't guaranteed that will make them believe that you're in it for helping them, but the effort that you put in with that 5-star process tells them that you're serious.
Okay.
Now, beyond that, the 12-4-2s that you do with them, separate from them being a client, tells them that you're serious also.
You recommend having a 12-4, I missed that part, a 12-4-2 with a center of influence?
That's correct.
Even if they're not a client?
Especially if they're not a client.
Especially if they're not a client. Okay. So four big conversations a year, two of them in person. And
well,
monthly.
In my case, I recommend this. You're going to think I'm crazy, but I recommend you meet with them monthly in person.
Okay.
Therefore, they need
that, right? I think you're crazy.
Right. Well, here's, I did this personally.
All right.
And now it's got to be a situation where it's convenient for both of you. So you can't have a center of influence that's way over in the other side of town. I mean, you can, but that's not for this purpose. Okay?
Okay.
So here's the way I would run it if I were you. You need to have three centers of influence. You're required, anytime you give a name, to give three names. Your firm demands it for compliance reasons. So you say, well, how can I meet with three of them monthly? Well, you can't. I don't recommend that.
Okay.
Your top center of influence, say, is a CPA. I recommend you meet with him or her monthly. I recommend you meet your number two. So let's say, using the baseball analogy, one's up to bat, one's on deck, and one's in the dugout. So it's monthly, quarterly, semi-annual.
But those are all, it's not the same person. It's that you're meeting 12, 14. It's as a group, and not as a group, but I mean as a group you're looking at, I'm going to meet with my centers of influence 12-4-2.
No.
One of them monthly. No?
No, sorry.
All right. Okay.
So here's the point. This would be a center of influence that was really a center of influence. Okay? So let's define what a center of influence is. Center of influence is somebody that likes you, trusts you, and sends you business without you asking.
Okay.
So what you've described is not a center of influence. It's a professional. Oh. It's a professional in an industry that you'd like to have as that center of influence.
But in other words, they're not it because they're not sending me business.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Now you have centers of influence.
Yeah.
You have people that send you business without you ever asking, right?
Yeah. Not as much as I'd like, but yeah.
Well, maybe you have one. Maybe you have two. I don't know. But everybody has one or two. It might be their parents, you know.
So they're not necessarily in the professional ranks.
Right.
You know, they may not be a CPA or an attorney. They may just be somebody who sends you business, trusts, and likes you. Yes, I have quite a few of those. They're not CPAs, they're just clients.
We call those natural centers of influence, and then we call the others are professional centers of influence.
Okay, all right.
Now, the advantage of having a professional center of influence is that his business sort of matches up theoretically to our business.
But from what you just told me, since I have professionals who like me, trust me, and I send them business, I might be their center of influence, but because they don't send business my way, they are not my center of influence. Do I have that definition correct? Okay.
Correct. So what we want to do, there's another book called Give and Take by Adam Grant. And what he talks about is that there are three kinds of people in the world: givers, takers, and matchers. And what he was curious about was who are the most successful?
The matchers.
So in a worldwide study, literally all over the world, studying this process, it turned out that the most successful were the givers. They're also the least successful. So how could they be the most successful and the least successful? Well, it's because you and I both have met givers that spend all of their time giving and never take care of themselves. So in our world of success being monetary, typically, they don't do well because they don't bother taking care of themselves. So what about givers that are givers but do really well? Well, it's because they take care of themselves first, and then they take care of others. So typically in high school, they would have gotten an A in the class, and then they'd help their friends get A's. And then in the workplace, they'd do their work first, and then they'd help their friends get their work done. Whereas the other person was getting a, you know, was getting a C because they were so busy helping others.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay. So the key to having centers of influence is to match up givers against givers. So what you are looking for is a person that likes you, trusts you, and wants to give you business because he likes you and trusts you. Not because you matched him, not because you gave him business, but because he likes to give you business. He wants to give you business. So the
what
key
do you
is
do, though?
You get a new one is what you do.
But let me explain the situation. There's only of the, I would say there's maybe three or four estate planning attorneys.
Yeah.
In the area. And when I put together my list of three, invariably 90% of my clients are going to go to one attorney. She's extremely good. She's extremely oddball, but she's also very price competitive. And in this area, that's kind of important. I mean, she can do all the work. She did her, if you want to call it an understudy, at the big player in town, which is Marshall. And in my experience with her, she does better work for about 30% of the price. And invariably, my clients go that way.
Yeah.
And I think if I were to send my clients or maybe guide them another way, which I would think I could, you know, to say, I do not believe I'd be doing them a service doing that. Because she does do that.
All right, so don't.
And she's a hell of a lot cheaper.
Yeah. She's not a center of influence, though.
No, she's not, but I would almost hesitate at pulling anybody away from her or guiding them toward another, because
I understand, and you don't need to.
That I like her. I trust her. The only thing that I worry about sometimes is she's such an odd duck that I have to prepare my clients for her. She's got her dogs in the damn office with her, and I've talked to her about it, and she's very within, I would say she's an undiagnosed Asperger, if that makes sense.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
And that. Mm-hmm. Have you ever?
I've never met her.
She's, but my clients will talk about it. Like, man, she was really good, but boy, when we first walk in there, we were kind of taking that, and I had to make sure that from that point on, that was like the second client I had referred there, and I immediately called the first one, and that person said she was great, but yeah, a little weird when we walked into her office. And so since that time, I've made great strides to make sure that they are aware that she's a little bit odd.
Sure.
Put it this way. So, Rob, if you ever get arrested and you need a criminal attorney, she ain't your girl.
Okay.
If she's your attorney, you're going to go to prison. The jury will not like her. But for what she does, she's outstanding.
So I've had this a lot with estate planning attorneys. So she just, you know, we just kind of write that area off. Okay.
Oh, okay. All right, that's
and
good
now
to
we
know.
Now we just go for CPAs, attorneys, business brokers, commercial realtors, other people.
Why do you write it off if you don't mind me asking?
Because you like her and you want to do business with her.
Oh, you mean, so it's not in general, it's just me?
Yeah, you write her off as a center of influence.
Okay, I thought you meant, like, you have determined for the group that you're going to write off estate planning attorneys as a center of influence.
No.
You're saying,
no,
I in your coaching
no.
with me, I have to write her off because
yes,
I like
write her off.
And she's...
Right, right. She's
okay.
not going to be a COI. So...
Okay.
You know, and based on what you said, not many people would take her advice anyway for anybody like her. So,
oh, no, they would. Know, they're taking her advice like crazy.
Yeah, but like, only in the estate planning, but if they...
Right.
Recommended a psychologist. If you recommended a psychologist, they'd really worry.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I got you. Okay. All right. Are you all right,
yeah.
or are you sick?
Oh, I've got this drippy allergy, kind of nasty, never goes away thing.
No.
Yeah, it's not fun, but it's okay. Anyway, so what you have to do is just say, okay, what's left? Okay? And not waste time. So what's left? Because you don't want to meet with her monthly. It drives her crazy.
True.
So you pick a good CPA,
mm-hmm.
and you meet with his or her team. Do you have a good CPA?
Yeah.
Do they refer you business?
No, like I said, I have an issue with their. I refer to them. I do not get in any class. Do I significant when I talk about the professional rather than natural? I have
yep.
difficulty translating those relationships into business, where they're referring things to me. They get stuff from me because my clients ask me, who do I. You know, do I have a CPA I recommend? And I've got a list of three that I respect and like in the area that I refer them to. But I get almost no business from them. I would have gotten it without them.
Now, are there more than three in the area, or is this it pretty much it?
What, CPAs?
Yeah.
CPAs are kind of like... Fleas, they're everywhere, and I
okay.
don't mean it
so we,
negative. I'm not
so have,
saying
have,
I mean
that's
not nothing special for our area. I just think there are a lot of CPAs with their shingle out in most
right.
places you go.
So we have choices.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, but these are the three we're gonna work on these guys for a year, and then we're gonna make a decision. Okay. So we're going to do the 12-4-2, basically. I like the way you thought of that. That was kind of cool, the whole group 12-4-2. Hey, if you did 12-4-2, that'd be awesome. You know, meaning 8 meetings with the one center of influence, or even 6 meetings, you know, with the one,
yeah.
4 with the other, and 2 with the other. That would be a miracle compared to what most people are doing now. They never meet with their CPA. They just expect to get introductions without meeting. The more you can meet, the more high probabilities you're going to get introductions. People say, why meet in person? I said, because it's hard to not give, you know, it's hard to meet every month and not come up with a name, right, or an introduction. I mean, how many months do you go on without giving an introduction? They know they're going to meet with you, and you've got 2 for them. And they've had none for you. They're going to keep on meeting? I don't think so. They're either going to come up with
and
a name,
if they
or
do,
they're not going
you're
to want
saying,
to
and if they do, if that does happen, you're saying in 12 months, go start meeting with somebody else because this guy's a bonehead.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And what you do is you don't just go in and start meeting. You set it up. So there's a 5-step process. One is you go and meet them and ask them about their practice. My guess, if I asked you about their practice today, you wouldn't be able to answer some basic questions, okay? And what would the basic questions be? What's their minimum? What's their average size client? How much revenues do they generate from each client? Where do they get their introductions? what number are you in the list of people that refer to them? So you can't answer any of those, right?
No.
Right. Okay. So after your first meeting, you're going to be able to answer those questions.
Okay.
So you want to know what their specialty is. What is their specialization? What's their ideal client look like? They could, you know, describe their best client, their ideal client. Now, you meet their team. So,
I think that's going to take more than one meeting, if you know what I mean.
No, do it all in one meeting. Do it all in the first meeting. You want to get to know them. This is their show and tell. This is their convincing you to do business with them. So you and Tracy both go and meet their staff. And basically you say, look, before I have anybody touch my clients, I want to really know who they are.
Okay. That's a good way. All right. So you're not saying, hey, I want you to refer me business. You're saying, look, I want to know more about your firm so I can consider referring clients to you.
Right. I would like to make a more accurate introduction.
Okay. All right.
All right. So now,
yes,
the
I
second,
get that. That actually
assuming, makes a lot of- assuming that goes well, the next is for them to get to know you. Why should they introduce you? So you bring them over to your shop, and you basically introduce yourselves through the five-star model. Planning, now it's only you guys, but you can talk about doing the roles and responsibilities. This is my, I'm putting on my hat as the financial planner, and this is what we do. This is our process for financial planning. This is putting on my director of implementation. This is my investment process. This is how we invest the money. This is the director. This is Tracy, the director of brand management. This is her responsibility for client contact, problem solving, rapid response to problems, 1 hour response, 24-hour resolution. This is how she does it. This is how we set up the folders, the 1242s, and this is how we can give an exceptional client experience because we limit our practice to less than 100 clients. And then
do you tell them your absolute minimum, or do you tell them just your regular, your advertised
target
minimum?
Target minimum.
Target minimum.
Okay. And then director of marketing, you talk about how you develop relationships with firms like theirselves. And
right.
And you co-brand certain seminars and client appreciation events, et cetera, in order to build relationships and co-introduce to each other. And then director of leadership is really the accountability coach to keep ourselves on track. So we meet twice a week. One meeting is on marketing and the other is overall growth of the company and how we're progressing in terms of all areas of the business. And that's our five-star meeting. And they'll be like totally blown away, okay? Because they don't do any of this. They don't do marketing. They don't do brand management. They don't do 1242s. They don't do leadership. They don't do, they just do what CPAs do. Okay. And yet they're running a service business. So you ask them what their service model is. It's to do their taxes and tell you when they're done.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. That makes sense. All right.
So they'll be blown away. They'll be very appreciative. Now, that's the third meeting or the second meeting, right? One in their office, one in. Well, the first meeting was to meet and tell them about what you want to do.
Right.
Want to build
Find out about that.
Well, the first,
second meeting
the first
was to,
meeting
for them
is,
to, for them to
yeah, okay.
get to know our business better.
Yes, that's actually the second meeting. The first meeting is kind of a heart-to-heart to see if the person is interested in building a relationship. Relationship is a road that goes in two directions. Okay? So you want to know whether you're wasting your time here with this person. I'm sorry, but I do business, all my business, all my referrals go to Merrill Lynch. And you go, okay, I'll see you later. Okay? So you want to find out.
They're already making a referral. You do not try and wiggle your way.
I would ask them, are you open to building a relationship with us? And if they say no, then I'd say thank you. I love you. Bye. When you are, give us a call.
All right. Okay. Do you have
okay.
With I love you.
I love you, babe. I love you. Always will. Always will. Call me. Call me. Give me a call.
Yeah.
Keep me on your speed dial. Okay.
Sorry. And I love you. I'll see you.
See you. Love you. Love you.
It might mean more coming from Tracy.
Right. I don't know. I think it would mean more coming from you. You'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the first meeting where you kind of look each other in the eye and say, you know, we've been dancing to each other for years now. Let's talk about really developing a business relationship. Well, what do you mean? Well, I'd like to meet monthly and talk about and share ideas and share clients and do some joint work together, do some joint seminars and do some training of clients and so forth. And he's like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Okay.
Right. Yes. So somebody
once you get the yes, then you go see him. Say, okay, the first step is for me to really get to know you. You know, I mean, I'm doing business with Touchstone now. And I said, well, the very first thing I should do is come and see you at Touchstone and learn your products, you know. And then
right. You
guys should learn what Supernova is. And I should teach you what Supernova is and how you can use it to leverage our relationships with our clients, right?
Yes.
So it makes sense in any business that you'd want to visit the plant, you know, before you jump in bed. You go to China to visit the plant and make sure they can deliver what they said, and it's not just a P.O. box somewhere. So,
okay.
So the first visit that. So the first one is the, you know, Do we have a hope in this relationship? Yes. Okay. Next is go visit them. You could strike out after you visit them and say their clients are too small. That's not where we go. None of their clients meet our minimum. This is not a good match. Okay.
Okay.
They could come and visit you and say, you know what, this isn't a good match. You know, we don't like the way you do business. And then you cut it off right there.
All right.
But assuming you get through meeting one, two, and three, then you go to meeting four, which is your first meeting, monthly meeting. And that's where you teach him or her the enthusiastically endorsed model. Why would you teach them that? Because that's the way they learn how to give you introductions.
Okay.
And it's not just their 200 clients, they can ask the question, can you enthusiastically endorse your financial advisor? They can ask anybody, anywhere. They can ask 500 people that. So as long as they ask that question, they will get you introduction.
Okay.
You cannot ask that question of 500 people without getting 20 of them saying, I need a new financial advisor.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. All right.
And don't think just because something is set. I just looked at the performance of my university, Wake Forest. You know what they got last year as a return? 5%. 5%. I mean, people are knocking out 22% without any problem. I mean, 30% was the market.
What was the risk profile that they only got 5?
I think they're expecting an economic collapse.
Who's they? I mean, they have more than one manager, I'm assuming. Usually,
no, they're idiots. I think it's an idiot. It's one of these idiot portfolios made up of hedge funds with, what do they call them?
Well,
guaranteed rate of return, or, you know, hedge funds and private equity.
Well, you have to run into a problem, because if you put a lot of, and some of the firms were doing this, Morgan Stanley included, that if you included alternatives in the portfolio, and they wanted a lot of them, like 15-16% going into this year, if you had that much last year, you really hurt your performance. But the idea of getting five,
the average hedge fund did 5%, and they're 2 and 20, right? And then the best of them did about 11%.
See,
now, who the hell is going to pay 2 and 20 for 11% or 5%?
Well, see, that's the whole thing. I look at those. A hedge fund is not. I don't believe they get year in, year out, the performance that justifies the expenses that they pay. The whole idea of the hedge fund is for it to be a piece of your portfolio so that when the shit hits the fan, you don't lose a significant portion of money. In other words, you don't want to, for my most conservative clients, it's not that they don't want, that they care about, they don't want to lose money, that's true. But it's not, I can't stand to lose money, it's they understand how much better you have to do in the future to make it up. You know, if you know that old adage, if you lose 10% and you make 10% next year, you're down.
Right. You know? No question.
And that's what the hedge fund is supposed to be there. But for you to make a determination over a year ago that you believed that the leading indicator of the economy was going to struggle in 2019... There weren't many. We were at the low end of expectations here at Morgan Stanley, but we still expect the market to do somewhere between 6 and 8%, and we were obviously dead wrong. But you would have had to believe that the market was going to negatively perform to justify a significant position in alternatives and hedge funds.
They had commodities, you know, they had commodities which underperformed. It's an academic portfolio that just got slaughtered, and it has for years now. So, I mean, I remember when Wake Forest had $1.5 billion, that was probably 20 years ago. And now they still have $1.5 billion. Now they've given a lot of money away, they give 5% away, but I don't care. You know, my foundation has grown. I'm mad at my foundation I'm mad because we got 22% on my foundation.
Well, it depends on what kind of risk parameters you were.
Right. That's right. It's a well-diversified portfolio. Anyway,
well, it's not
my point
diversified.
Is
it has to do with what is it diversified into. If your risk tolerance is, you know, 10 to 15%, you've got 65 to 70% of your assets in risk assets, you're not going to get the 28 or 29% that the S&P got, because you've got 30 or 40% of your money doing something else. You know, and
And you have cash too, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and
my point is that not everybody's doing great, okay? So there's opportunities around, okay, as long as there are idiots like these guys.
I get you. All right, you're trying to just say, look, just because they've got a lot of money, that doesn't necessarily mean they did well. That doesn't mean you won't find that they're receptive to talking to you about becoming a center of influence or, yeah, I get, okay, that makes sense.
Right. I'm going to raise hell.
Call Wake Forest and ask them why the hell they only got 5%.
I just did. And It's embarrassing. I mean, they're supposed to be smart, right?
Well,
typical academic.
Well, no, that's they're supposed to be smart but not have a lot of wisdom. That's an academic. Now, as long as you don't have the Rob Knapp School of Business there, I think you're in good shape. If you've got the Rob Knapp School of Business at Wake Forest and they only did 5%, you got a bigger problem.
Well, it's, you know, it just means my money isn't compounding at the way it should, you know. You spend a lot less.
It means your name is stamped to an organization that might be doing great work, but people are going to look at it and go, oh, my God.
Well, it's just, you know, like I said, it should be $2.5 billion by now, and that kicks off a hell of a lot more than what this one's kicking off.
Yeah.
You know, so they can make all their pretty charts they want to, and I'm like, I'd fire the whole.
Okay, you're a financial guy, so what does the average non-financial director or board of trustees for Wake Forest say when they see a report that they only were up 5.5%? Because that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make money when the market goes down.
And they're not going to make money when they don't make money. I've been in boards where they played this game of, well, we're going to not make money when the market goes up, but boy, when the market goes down, we're going to really hedge our position. Well, they still go down, okay?
Yeah. The whole idea is, hey, we what we want is to get 120%, that would be a dream, but I mean 120% of the upside with 70% of the downside.
You know, right. That's why we use that upside downside capture ratio.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what you want.
But the idea that you only got, oh my God, 15 or 20% on the upside. I guarantee you, you're going to go down something on the downside. You might, you know, you might get a. That's.
Well, I think they captured the downside on the commodities.
There we go. I told you our guys really liked energy. And then
yeah,
they came out
that's great.
The announcement that they were cutting our energy position from 16% to 8%. And the good news, Rob, was we didn't have to call a soul and tell anybody to sell because it had already gone down to 8%.
Oh, God. That's so sad.
It was horrible. And I was lucky because I did not take the, like, even now, when you look at the GIC models, they're sitting here and they are looking, they want for an aggressive client, they want them to have 39% international.
Oh,
that's
God.
Nuts. Just because they're aggressive doesn't mean that they're giving you the permission to do what you think is best, meaning they have a lot of, you know, you invest with your stomach as much as you do your head, and they've got a cast iron stomach, and they understand that they can take the downside. But that doesn't mean they immediately want to go to that kind of holding international. And so I typically, when they're that high, I might sit at 25 to 29%. I just can't make myself go that heavy. And every once in a while, it bites me in the ass that our GIC will outperform me because of that. But it isn't all that much. It might be one out of every one or two out of every decade, or, you know, one quarter out of every 10, if I shrink it down further than that. So, well, anyway, it's just, sometimes they get a little nutty. Like, they think that because they're aggressive, we must have a lot of their money overseas. Why the hell do you want to have it in a spot?
It's like they're value playing. What they're saying is, okay, look at the energy market. It's selling at 9x earnings with a 6% dividend. Great buy. And then they look at the international, and they go, well, the PEs are here are 19, and they're 16, so we're going to buy all international. Well, you don't understand why.
And they also make it.
Why are they 16 there? Because the place is a dump, okay?
Yeah. Well, the other part is that they very often will look at it and say, yeah, internet, it goes in spurts. You know, 8 to 10 year spurts of domestic outperforming international, and we're due. And yeah, we are. But even when we are due and you want to increase your position overseas, you're talking about going from 15 or 20% and maybe going to 20 or 25. It's like that person, yeah, it's like that person who listens to the talking heads on television when they say it's time to move the cash and they move their whole damn portfolio. That isn't what those guys are talking about. That's not what they mean. They don't know what you own. They don't know what your portfolio is. You got to simply move a portion of it. Like when my objective becomes that I want to increase a cash position, what it typically means, it happens naturally, meaning the market's at a 19, it's at an all-time high, I'm selling things as they hit our target prices and other factors, and I sell it, and since I don't have another good idea that I really want to pound the table because the market's at a all-time high, I park it in a cash or ultra-short bond fund portfolio until I know what I want to do with it. It kind of builds cash organically. And I'm heavier in cash now than I probably have been in my whole career over the last 6 or 7 months, and it's only at 15, 16%. It's not overwhelming, and it's not because I want to have 15, 16%. It's because as I look for equity ideas, it's difficult for me to buy, just to give you an example, Facebook at 220 or Apple at 320 or whatever the hell price it's trading at now.
You're comfortable with Tesla?
No. Not at $800.
Anyway. All right, Rhett.
If you're asking me if I wish I would have been comfortable when it was at 200, yeah, there's no such thing as owning too much of a stock going up. But I just can't bring myself to buy an $800 stock that you can't see when it's going to necessarily turn profitable. And they've got an awful lot bet on doing well in China. And it's funny, I look for kind of unique ideas too, like Apple. They took a hit the other day, and our guy stepped up and said, look, this coronavirus is not going to be the people are trapped in their apartments, unable to mingle with people. Guess what they're buying? They're going to the Apple store and buying apps to play with while they're trapped in their apartments.
Right.
And I thought that was a very unique way of looking at it. Anyway.
Their version of Netflix, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Anyway. I'll let you go, Rob.
Homework
yes.
is to follow these 5 steps.
Okay.
Okay? And do it as many times as you can, because don't expect, just like hiring Tracy, it's never... You know, if Tracy weren't there and you needed to hire somebody, it wouldn't be just one interview, okay? You need to have multiple interviews for any time you're going to be developing any kind of relationship, whether it be a business partner or anybody else. So you don't just take on another FA, you don't take on another... So just think of this as a new business partner and how much you'd scrutinize that before you made a decision that this is going to work out great. So just put that kind of effort into it.
All right. Will do, sir. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you.
And hey, if your foundation continues to underperform, give me a call.
I will. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.